This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's already the last Monday of August, and so it's time also for my wrap-up with the folks from environmental journalism portal Makaranga, Lau Yao Hua and Wong Siu Lin, who are the co-founders, co-editors and writers there. And we're going to have a roundup of all the news from the conservation world in August. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Hello, good, thanks. Good afternoon.
Lovely to have you back on the show. So, we're going to start off with a bit of some sad news, actually. I think it was right at the beginning of August, August the 6th, that we got news that Balu Perumal, who was the head of conservation for the Malaysian Nature Society, passed away after battling COVID-19. And I think, it was really, really sad news. We saw the outpouring of grief from so many people, following his passing. And I think all of us have had some sort of interaction with him or have worked with him in some capacity. I mean, for me personally, actually, it was doing the Forest Files interview with you, Yao Hua, where I managed to chat with him. And I'm so grateful that we managed to get him on. How about you guys? How did you guys know Balu?
Yeah, it was a very sudden, very saddening loss for all of us. Especially at for Makaranga, certainly, because he was a great help, such great help to us, and so friendly, and especially for my stories last year and Forest Files, he was extremely open to questions and sharing and guiding me. I knew very little about forestry laws and stuff at the time. Balu, he has been in conservation, doing conservation work in Malaysian forests and communities for like 30 years. He started with WWF in 1990, right? Stayed there for quite a few years, I think 11 or 12 years, and then went on to doing the same conservation work with different organizations. And then in the last 8 or 9 years, he was with MNS as their head of conservation. So you can see on social media, there was a huge outpouring of grief and respect, of his legacy, right? Yeah. So it definitely hit us hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it brings back a memory from when I was working for a newspaper, and I heard of this guy working in wetlands in the mangrove area in Kuala Gula. And I wanted, at that time, it was just, I think, starting to be recognized as a very important site for birds, as well as, its mangroves. I heard of this mad person working in the mangroves, managed to track him down by phone, had a long interview with him, and it was Balu, basically. And this mangrove project that he worked on actually has become a kind of template, for how to work with community and getting community involvement in mangroves. And that's definitely one of his legacies. We were approached by some former chargers of his, from an NGO who wanted to write a tribute to him. So please go to Makaranga. It's quite a moving tribute that they have written.
Mm-hmm. And we also have a short clip of, I think it's from your archives, isn't it, Yao Hua, that we're going to play. Let me just play it now.
For me, forest is home, rumah. I'm sure when something very bad happens, I think the first place I'll run to will be the forest. Make my home inside that. But we need to understand that in that forest, when I say home, there are many other beings also living there, meaning that we need to know who's staying there and how they use the space and time, right? Forest is a living area. To get the maximum out of it, everybody must be there. Say, for example, if you have, unsustainable activities, like logging. Okay, what does that mean to the animals living in there or even for the fishes in the river? It's like a war zone. So they are pushed away or thrown away. So we must be very, very careful. And if they are very healthy, then we can get a lot of benefits from them. So this is why I always say, we need to look into the economics. I think everybody knows the benefit, but to put it in dollar cents, that's the very difficult part. So it's a home and we coexist, co-inhabit the place. So we should take care of it, lah.
Okay, so tell me about that clip, Yahua. I mean, what was the sort of context in which he gave, which he was talking to you about that?
Well, it was recorded last year, so 2020, when I asked him, tell me what do you feel about forests? What are forests to you and your vision for forests? And the clip that we played just now about a minute of it was just part of the whole thing. And, you know, it's in it, you could easily, you know, feel his affinity, his love and his passion for forests, and not just for the trees, right, but for all the living things that use and live in the forest, right, and how we must consider, you know, the impact of all our actions on those on the things that live in the forest. And he's right. Very often we forget there are beings that live in the forest. And when he said being, I was like, oh, what do you mean? It was like, you know, animals and the people, of course. And yeah, so it's really something to bear in mind. And he also laid down some of, like, the challenges for us, right, to really capture the values of the forest, not just the economy, but also to translate all those other values, right, ecological, you know, aesthetics, into quantitative values. And he said that's something that they found challenging, and I'm sure it is a challenge in the future too.
Yeah, I think he's left quite a legacy, and so much, unfortunately, so much unfinished work as well, you know, on his part. But I know that many people are taking up, you know, the things that he was working on. And yeah, I mean, yeah, it was just really sad news. Like, it was really just so upsetting. And I think it's one of the first conservationists that we all know personally who passed away due to COVID. But yeah, I guess just a hope that everyone stays safe and gets vaccinated as fast as possible.
Yeah, I was planning to, like, interview him for this upcoming story, and I was like, huh, what? Ayo,
Yeah, but I think, you know, just reading the article that it was posted on Makaranga by some of his formerly worked with him, the amount of knowledge transfer that he did do in his lifetime, you know, that's, you know, something really that we should be grateful for. And I'm glad that he did that. You know, he always was so approachable and spoke to everybody, regardless, you know, who, students, conservationists themselves. Yeah, and just a great guy, really. Condolences to his family. And to the MNS over his loss. But just kind of moving on to some of the things that he was also working on, you know, forest conservation as well. We saw some major floods happening over in Kedah. Also, we saw heavy downpours that caused a water surge and landslides on Gunung Jerai. And there were three other different districts, Yan, Kuala Muda and Bandar Baru in Kedah. They were hit by some massive floods. We saw some casualties. What happened there?
Yeah, it was about 2 weeks ago, right? So on the evening or late afternoon of 18 August, right? So the villages, well, let's just focus on, so it happened all around, the disaster that you described happened, you know, around Gunung Jerai in Kedah, but in the town of Yan itself, right? Several villages was, you know, devastated by these flood waters that carried, you know, that flowed down, surged down from Gunung Jerai. And it wasn't just water, it was like mud, logs, and plenty of debris. You know, the waters are described by the residents, and also in many of the videos that have gone viral, you could see that it was fast and furious, right? And and it came down the hill. And to date, you know, six persons have died in that sudden flood. The media have subsequently called the flood as a mud flow, right? And but what actually caused it, I think we don't have a conclusion yet. Mm-hmm. The authorities are still investigating the actual cause of this flood, landslide, mud flow. But the severity of it has shocked us all. Definitely shocked the residents, because they said they have not seen anything like it there, right? Yeah. And since then, just within days, right, of the incident, the meteorological department state that the disaster was caused by, you know, like, extreme rainfall over Gunung Jerai, and so they attribute to the rains. And the Department of Mineral and Geoscience later, you know, they used drones to assess the area, and they found that up to, I think, 47 landslides have occurred after the disaster. And, you know, it was because of the heavy rains, and also that the hill, right, was like an inclination of more than 25 degrees, so that it was definitely a gunung. It's a forest reserve. The area is a forest reserve, and people do hike. There's like a waterfall. I haven't been there, but you could find pictures right online. Mm. Yeah, so now the Department of Minerals and Geoscience are still assessing the area, and, you know, we don't have a conclusion yet what caused the disaster. But they are already mapping out, you know, for future risk assessment plans. On the other hand, also, although the authorities say it's like, you know, just, you know, heavy rainfall on a slope or on a hill, on the other hand, you know, several NGOs have come out to say that, you know, this disaster was caused not just, of course, by the heavy rains, but also by deforestation on Gunung Jerai itself. And they pointed to a mining operation that I think started some like 10, 15 years ago. And of course, also pointing to climate change, right? Extreme weather, you know, brought by climate change. So that's that. I think it's probably too early for us to say anything conclusive right now. It could be a combination of all those things, right? But the truth is, you know, 6 people died, about 1,000 houses affected, and huge loss, right? Not just in, definitely in casualties and for the families, but the government is also allocating like 75 million in aid and infrastructure construction to prevent future floods. So all of this, right, this disaster, I mean, I think we can expect more of these things coming, right, with climate change. And we hear more and more of developments on hilly areas and slopes, and it really, really warrants like scrutiny and attention. And something's happening over at Cameron Highlands now.
Yes, we heard about that mega project that's actually going to happen over in Cameron's, right? That's what you're talking about, Yahua, aren't you?
Yeah, mega, I guess in size also, it's like something like 60 acres, right? That project, the Escape theme park.
Yeah. Siulin, is there something that's you wanted to talk about that? Yeah.
Just to add on a bit. So this is basically a proposal by a very large corporation based in Singapore, actually, who runs theme parks all over the world, to create a five European themed village theme park with over 20 attractions, including a ski lift and a dry ski slope on Cameron Highlands. So there's already a petition going around. There's been a lot of media coverage, both on the potential investment that is going to come in, as well as those who are opposing it, including local residents on Cameron Highlands. There's also a video online, so we'll repost that on our Twitter in conjunction with this show. And you can see what they are envisioning for this very hilly area in the Cameron Highlands. Just something to say that this company also runs a very popular theme park, Escape theme park in Penang. So I just looked it up on TripAdvisor, and they are five star. They've got 5-star rating. They are immensely popular. They are actually a traveler's choice.
Right, so theme parks like this. Is that also on the hill?
Yes, it's on Teluk Bahang in Penang. Yeah, and they call it hosted with nature in mind, is how the description is. Yeah. So you can go to TripAdvisor, take a look at the ratings, look at what people say, what great fun they have up there. And it's very, very big money coming in at the time when the country is suffering economically from the blows of COVID. So it's going to be a very tough challenge to try and, you know, balance much needed economic income with the environment.
Mm-hmm. Hosted with nature in mind, excellent copywriting. How I wish Makaranga we can come up with something like that. Well, the details are still scarce on this this proposed development on Cameron Highlands. On the Department of Environment's website, there is no announcement of any EIA related to this Escape theme park on Cameron Highlands. So we got to wait. In fact, I'm not sure that they need to submit an EIA, because the size is smaller. 60 acres is smaller than what is necessary for an EIA on Schedule 1 and Schedule 2. And it depends on whether the area they're building on is how slopey is it, like how steep is it. So maybe there is no EIA required, which means that we probably won't get a lot of information. I mean, journalists.
It does depend on how steep the slopes are.
I do know, like, I think anyone who's been to Cameron's have said that the place is overcrowded as it is. It's just a mess as it is. So, you know, I mean, hopefully if this does go through, at least some proper planning is executed before it actually happens. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But I do know that we do know the residents are trying their best to put a stop to it, right? That's currently what's happening at the moment. There's a campaign going for that.
Yep, that's right.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that for sure. But, you know, just moving on to, well, not some also not so great news. The Bunting, and I know you're going to laugh at me, Yahua, for pronouncing it like that, in Borneo, are facing even more danger because of poaching, and they might even become endangered because they are being poached to, I don't know, to oblivion again, as we are wont to do here.
Yeah, there's a new study. It's a 5-year study, and they've come up with the scientific paper in a journal that clearly demonstrates that bunting hunting can lead to extinction. So, you know, there's always people saying, oh, yes, you know, hunting's not good, poaching is not good, it's threatening them. But this is actual evidence that hunting of bunting can lead to extinction. What's the bunting for those? Just a quick rundown. The Borneo bunting, the Bos javanicus lawi, is found only in Sabah. It's actually a wild cattle species. It's known locally as the Tembadau. Its cousin in Semenanjung Peninsula is the Gaur, which is the Bos gaurus or Seladang. These are big, big animals. What scientists and wildlife officers did was to just put camera traps over the 5 years, and they counted around 320 individuals remaining in the whole of Sabah. Previously, I think the estimate was up to 500. So this is wild bunting, yeah, but they live in very small scattered populations, and they call them, you know, the number of so-called management units is only 4 management units. Basically, small populations need to be managed as part of a larger population in order to ensure, you know, continuity of the species. So there's only 4 that they've identified, 4 management units, and the smallest one is completely isolated. So some of these units, the animals actually, you know, move between each other, different groups sort of thing. But the one in the northeast in Sipitang is very, very small and completely isolated from the rest. So that's at greatest risk of extinction. And they're basically saying that if only 1% of the population was hunted, that's it, it's gone. Cool. And overall, if 5% of the population were hunted every year, extinction is possible as early as 21 years. And they're saying maybe 21, as early as 21 years, we're going to lose the Tembadau in Sabah. Yeah. So, okay, that's the bad news. There is good news. The Sabah Wildlife Department, 2 years ago in 2019, they set up intelligence and forensic units to fight poaching and illegal trade of bunting. So something's being done. And basically, there was a very big conservation seminar, webinar, involving wildlife experts, including in Sabah. And what they did was to also focus on the Tembadau. Yeah, so we have BORA, which is used to be the Borneo Rhino Alliance, and they were obviously in charge of the rhinos. Yeah, we know that the rhinos have died out, right? So now they have rebranded themselves as Bringing Back Our Rare Animals, still the same acronym, BORA. And they are using lessons from the failed rhino saving project to try and look at big mammals, including the bunting. And 2 things that they're doing. One is they're looking at habitat loss and degradation. Yeah. So we have the hunting going on, which Wildlife Department, Sabah Wildlife Department, and NGOs are trying to do something about. But there's 2 other things that BORA is also focusing on using lessons from the Rhino project. One is nutrition due to habitat loss and degradation. So they're doing enrichment, planting, and restoring of feeding grounds. Yeah. And the second thing is something that is a little bit controversial, but they're using looking at using captive breeding, just like what they tried to do with the rhino, right? Right. So basically, how do you keep a population sustained? You use labs, you use hormones, special apparatus to initiate pregnancies. They tried that with the rhinos, but it was too late. Now, is it going to be too late for the bunting?
I hope not.
Well, they still have about 300 plus, right? And it's I think probably the bunting is easier to manage, to monitor, right? Well, definitely they're building on experience they have had with the rhinoceros. So that's I think it's definitely hopeful. And you know, it's from the webinar, it's like there's this coordinated effort, right? Built on scientific knowledge. And I guess what's needed now is just a lot of will to carry it out and see it through. Yeah. And then also, again, excellent copywriting there, Bora, bringing back our rare animals. Good stuff.
Talent everywhere. But especially with, you know, from the both of you. And, you know, if anyone would like to read the articles or see everything that you guys have been working on, they just need to head to makaranga.org. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Wong Siew Lin and Lau Yao Hua, co-founders, co-editors and writers at Makaranga. Just head to makaranga.org for more. And if you missed any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, download the podcast at bfm.my/earth or find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.